New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Okay, welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And each and every week, it is time for us to go under the helmet up in Lincoln, Nebraska, with one of the greatest to have ever been a part of the Husker program. And that is the double nickel, number 55, Jason Peter, who is joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. How are you? I hope you're staying warm up in Nebraska, Jason.
Yeah, it just kind of jumped on us. A little bit. One day it's 60 and the sun is shining, and then the next thing you know, just a few hours later, you're looking deep into the closet for the winter jacket.
Oh, well, I have to tell you, our oldest son, Steven, he's like, Mommy, it's so cold out. I've got to turn on the fireplace. And it's like 50 degrees. So you can just tell we've gotten so spoiled.
You should come up here for a week.
Right. Believe me. Okay, so Jason, you are our ultimate guide and resource for the Big Ten Conference, and that's where, let's start our conversation off there. Let's delve into the Ohio State Buckeyes, that impressive win over Michigan State. In my mind, I mean, perhaps this is the most improved team in the country.
Well, that's what a lot of people are saying. But it's hard to tell, because all you're doing is you're playing your conference opponents, and to be honest, the Big Ten is not really high on anybody's list. So, is Ohio State truly a much better football team? I think they are, from where they were at the beginning of the season, obviously with a young quarterback who's taken over, and you kind of, you're figuring out the play calls where, he's successful, and, a comfort zone, as well as, coaches have to feel comfortable as well. But at the same time, then, you're also playing other teams from a conference that doesn't get a lot of respect nationally. Now, the one school that did was kind of Michigan State. At least on the defensive side of the ball, most people thought that was a team that you could put up pretty much against anybody else's, defense from around the nation, whether it be an SEC team, Pac-12 team, you name it. People thought Michigan State, they were kind of, in that elite group defensively. And, I said last week I thought it was going to be Michigan State, but with Urban Meyer, you can never count them out. And, they just had a great game plan. And, I think people, they go into Michigan State, sometimes they see how aggressive, the secondary can play. The corners come up right up on the line of scrimmage. They try to get physical with guys. And Ohio State and Urban, they just did not back away from pressing on those corners and really stressing that secondary. And, with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, too, it doesn't really matter what everybody's saying about Michigan State or what they're saying about you. Sometimes kids, they believe they have a shot no matter what. Now, you also can get the flip side of that coin as well. But I just think in that case, when you look at that game, I just think that Ohio State team never even considered that they were going to lose that game.
It is our weekly Under the Helmet segment with our very own Jason Peter, who is joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I just step back and I look at Ohio State, what they've been able to accomplish at this point in the season. I mean, you think about Jason, all the players they had to replace, their starting quarterback and Big Ten MVP in Braxton Miller. They had to replace their star running back in Carlos Hyde and four offensive linemen. Once again, as you said, and you hit on it, just the job that Urban Meyer does. I mean, that really just says what an outstanding coach he is and a leader.
Yeah, he really is, and that's a school that from the moment that he stepped foot as the head coach of Ohio State University, the recruiting, was taken to another level. He was going, and I remember when he first took the job, the talk was, here you have Urban Meyer who is going and he's signing SEC-type players to play in the Big Ten. And, you know, I think when you look at that roster, you can see where they're pretty talented. Now, you know, losing, you know, four offensive linemen, you know, losing your Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback, you know, a running back that's playing on Sundays, you know, guys off defense. Yeah, I mean, he, I'm sure, will feel more comfortable, you know, next year and the year after that. But I think he's starting to have, you know, a couple maybe nights a week where maybe he's sleeping a little bit better, knowing that, you know, the cupboard's not completely dry, that he's got some guys. And sometimes when you have young guys that are taking over, it takes a little bit of time. And that obviously sometimes isn't a luxury that these college coaches or teams have, especially now, because, you know, when you're playing an out-of-conference game within the first, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of the season, and usually that's the big one that they're playing, you know, a young guy, sometimes it takes six, seven games, but you don't have that luxury nowadays.
It is the fastest 2 hours in radio right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, always on Friday nights between 8 and 10 Eastern Time. Jason Peter is joining us. And, Jason, what did you think of JT Barrett? I mean, did you think he was going to be this good to fill in for Braxton Miller? I mean, what are perhaps some of those keys to his growth? Because you start looking at his stat line. He's thrown 23 touchdowns. He has had just three interceptions.
Yeah, I can't say that I saw this coming. I thought Ohio State was going to be in for a rough year. And I think most people did.
I did.
You know, the loss to Virginia Tech as well. I think a lot of people then were really thinking, yeah, this is going to be a tough year. But, I mean, this kid, you know, I think when I first saw him play, I thought, all right, this is going to be an offense that's just purely going to rely on him scrambling and trying to pick up yards and move the chains off of broken plays or him panicking back there and maybe not going through his, you know, his progression. You know, maybe he looks at one receiver and boom, that guy's covered, so you know what, I'm going to tuck the ball and I'm going to run. And that maybe in the beginning, but not now. Not now at all. I mean, for Urban Meyer to come out and say he's looking forward to the quarterback competition next spring, you know, I think that says a lot. This is a kid that is certainly not a Heisman front runner, but, you know, he's kind of one of those names that people are throwing in at the end of a conversation. And, you know, that says a lot. You know, he's young. He's still kind of wet behind the ears. And, you know, lots of times that can be, I think, a benefit, a plus for a guy, is that maybe, you know, he doesn't overthink things. You know, I think sometimes we tend to do that as fans, as coaches. I think sometimes they try to get a little too technical. You know, it's not the NFL. It's college football. And usually if you have better athletes out on the field and guys that are willing to put forth the effort, usually you'll come out on top. And I think that's pretty much, you know, Ohio State in a nutshell. They've got better players. They got better athletes. They just have to go out and execute Urban's game plan.
Husker great Jason Peter joining us each and every week for our Under the Helmet segment. We've got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be rejoined with Jason. We're going to get into what's going to happen when Braxton Miller comes back, or if he comes back to Ohio State for his senior season, and the competition, it is certainly going to heat up, as he was talking about. We will be right back, and much, much more at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Yes, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, as we continue to guide you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. And one of our very favorite guests, Jason Peter, has been joining us with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We were shining the spotlight on the Ohio State Buckeyes. I mean, they have certainly exceeded many expectations because, of course, coming into the season with their injured starting quarterback, their MVP in Braxton Miller. So that's where I want to pick up our conversation, Jason. What is going to happen if Braxton Miller, he comes back to OSU for his senior season? I mean, poor JT Barrett, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is similar to, golly, what was it, 1995 here at Nebraska with Tommy Frazier and Brooke Boerner.
Okay.
And, you know, Tommy had blood clots and ultimately missed most of the 94 season, and And, you know, Brooke, obviously, BTN did a great piece. I know a lot of people saw the special on him. But Coach Osborne, pretty much for that following year, he came out and he said, look, I'm not interested in kind of a two-quarterback system. So they will have a competition in the spring, and they're going to chart everything, and they're going to, you know, grade these guys on every single snap that they take. And I would imagine, and ultimately Tommy Frazier ended up winning that quarterback battle, but I would imagine that Urban Meyer probably does something like that. Now, in my eyes, the quarterback that goes out with that first team for that, you know, first snap in the spring is Braxton Miller.
Right.
You know, he was the guy who had been starting since, Jesus, freshman year. And, you know, this is a guy that many had as, you know, one of the front runners for the Heisman Trophy. And you know, he had kind of been through some battles. Now, JT Barrett has also kind of, you know, gone to battle for Urban, but I just think, you know, he's younger, and Braxton has kind of put in his time. At least he gets the honor of going out there, and not that it's his job to lose, but at least you give him the first shot with that number one offense. But ultimately, I think, you know, you got to kind of have an open competition, and you just got to see who plays best throughout spring ball and then, you know, fall camp.
Okay, so we've hit on the Ohio State Buckeyes. Talk to me about your Huskers. Huge test on Saturday as they prepare for Wisconsin, a 3:30 Eastern time kickoff. Nebraska right now, just to recap, is ranked 11th nationally. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, this is one Nebraska's got to have. And I'm sure the Big Ten is hoping for Nebraska to win. Obviously, Wisconsin's got an additional loss there, and they don't need a two-loss team to kind of, you know, get to Indy and then ultimately potentially, you know, take down whether it's Ohio State. That's what it looks like, will be Ohio State. You know, if Big Ten is kind of crossing their fingers here to hopefully get a team in that Final Four, you want, you know, your two best teams record-wise to be in Indy, and then hopefully you can kind of, you know, sneak in the back door. But Nebraska, you know, people were a little shocked. You know, they dropped three spots in the college football playoff committee, the latest poll. And, you know, they didn't play last week. So, you know, do I have a problem with them dropping? I don't know. You know, it's not like they've been real impressive in the victories that they've had. But right now, Wisconsin is a team that is not in the hunt in that regard, but I think people are looking at Wisconsin like they're one of those teams that has improved significantly from the beginning of the season to where we are right now. And Nebraska absolutely has to have it. You know, Wisconsin can be a tough place to play.
Right.
Madison, they get a little crazy up there. And, you know, it's just Nebraska needs to go up there. They need to shut down the run and Melvin Gordon, and they need to play solid on defense. You know, anytime you go on the road, those are the two things that you kind of need to do, as well as special teams. And fortunately, Nebraska has been playing really good special teams. So if they can just kind of, you know, slow down that Wisconsin running game, I don't know if Wisconsin through the air is enough to beat Nebraska.
Okay, talk to us about Amir Abdullah, the star running back, the nation's third best rusher. Is he 100%?
Well, that's what we're hearing. You know, at the beginning of the week, maybe he was practicing with a little limp here and there, but supposedly he's all good to go. Now, big difference, obviously, in practice as compared to the game, and it's just going to be kind of, I think, all between you know, the shoulders there. It's is he going to feel confident? And he won't know. It's kind of like, you know, it's not as, I guess, extreme as, you know, a guy who's come back from ACL surgery, but in the same regard, it's that battle you have in your head, and it's, do I really trust, you know, this knee for the first time when I, you know, decide I'm going to, you know, jump cut and I want to change directions, is it going to be able to plant and am I going to be solid kind of exploding off of that leg? And I don't think any of us know that. I don't think Amir knows that until game day and, you know, it's for real and, you know, the proverbial bullets are live and, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see that first time he plants on it and goes.
Okay, certainly a lot is on the line with this game against Wisconsin. Any updates on tight end Stephen Carter? Because, I mean, he certainly can provide some presence out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he kind of is one of those hybrid sort of guys, tight ends. And, you know, I think Nebraska has never really, they've never really got deep into using a guy like that. And, you know, I think with Tommy Armstrong, you know, sometimes he panics and he just, you know, there's 2-3 balls that you just absolutely cannot throw over the course of a game. And I think if they start to have that tight end presence in there, you know, where sometimes younger quarterbacks, they feel a little comfortable just throwing, you know, a little 6-7 yard route crossing pattern to the tight end than they do, you know, throwing a post route or something, and you know where coverage is an integral part of throwing that ball and
right.
What have you.
Okay, we're looking forward to the game, Nebraska at Wisconsin on Saturday. That of course was Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Always awesome, Jason. You stay warm up there with the family. We look forward to catching up with you next week. Okay, take care.
Sounds good, E. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Jason Peter has been with us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out StuartCadillac.com. We will be right back with much, much more at Yahoo Sports Radio. Yes, good evening and welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And it is a pleasure to have back with us national columnist with USA Today. That, of course, is Christine Brennan. She is joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line. Stewart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Christine, how are you?
Well, I'm great, Alyssa. How are you?
I'm great. It's always fun to be talking some college football with, I would say, my favorite columnist. And what a week in college football. I mean, the playoff committee shakes up the top four after, I would say, the first 2 weeks. They had pretty predictable results. My question to you is, did they get it right?
You know, it is so hard to say if they're getting it right, obviously, because this is, as you know, a snapshot in time. You know, where right now we're just kind of looking at something that is that is so fluid and that will change, could change tomorrow again with the games on Saturday. And so it just is, I don't mean to avoid your question, Alyssa, but I think this would be the equivalent of if the men's or women's basketball committee for the NCAA kept giving out rankings of 64 teams during the season, our heads would be spinning. And so as much as I like the fact that they're doing this, I also think that what seems to be happening now is we're almost getting too much information. Because it's just constantly changing. Obviously, Alabama is out right now, but they win, they're going to be in. We know TCU, Baylor. I mean, TCU is looking really good right now, but you know, and Oregon's looking great. And one would think that maybe they could win out. But the bottom line is, we just have no idea until we finally see the rankings on December 7th.
Well, it is overwhelming as you're talking about all the different information, but what in your mind, what criteria matters the most? I mean, because I think in many ways the committee is sending a very strong message that strength of schedule is very important. I mean, look what happened to Baylor. I mean, they had a very weak non-conference schedule with SMU, Buffalo, Northwestern State, and it has hurt them. It prevented them from getting in that top four.
Exactly, I agree, and I think strength of schedule is the most important thing for the committee, and I would agree with that. The notion of playing, you know, patsies, you know, playing the old joke, Little Sisters of the Poor, or whatever, and just beating up on these people is not paying off in this new format, and I think that is positive, and I think we're going to see some of these universities scramble to try to get stronger opponents. Now, I come from the Big Ten; I'm a Northwestern grad, mm-hmm. and I know, you know, the Big Ten has been weak, notoriously weak now the last, well, I don't know, I don't want to say my lifetime, but certainly for the last, you know, X number of years, with exceptions, and I'm very proud of the Big Ten for many other reasons, academics hugely among them. But so that's fine. But the reality is, so Ohio State, of course, beats Michigan State, but they're still only number 10 Do they go to 8? I think that's mm-hmm. it. I'm looking at it. But bottom line is, they're not in the top four. They have one loss. So a one-loss Big Ten team is looked at in a far lesser way, frankly, than some of these other teams. And I'm going to say that's as it should be, because the SEC has just been so strong with all those national championships. But could this happen? The cannibalization of the SEC. They all beat up on each other so much that they all end up with two losses. That's possible, of course, as the scenarios play out. So it's fascinating, it's confounding, and I am almost entirely convinced that we are not going to be satisfied with the four teams as they give us the final four on December 7th.
Well, those four teams, Mississippi State, Oregon, Florida State, TCU, the dark side of me is starting to come out a little bit. I have to ask you, what team perhaps would be the least likely to make the playoff in that top four? I mean, as you're saying, I mean, we've got still 4 weeks, so much can change, but a little bit of the pessimism. I mean, who do you think might not make it?
Well, I think it's going to be the SEC school, Mississippi State. I mean, they have the toughest road to go yet. And so,
true.
Oregon... Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody, right? I mean, we're talking about Oregon, Florida State, TCU, correct?
Yeah, and Mississippi State.
Yeah, and then Mississippi State. Well, the toughest schedule coming up is for Mississippi State. I mean, one can easily see Florida State, Oregon, and TCU winning out. I mean, anything's possible, so we have no idea. But they could all win out. I think if you're playing in the SEC, as we were saying, it's definitely the toughest conference in the country. So, and you have to play games against the SEC. Automatically, there is much more of a X factor there if you can win those games. And therefore, I would say Mississippi State's in trouble because they lose to Alabama. Alabama will certainly replace them in the top four.
National columnist with USA Today, Christine Brennan, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Christine, tell all the listeners across the country where they can connect with you and check out some of your work with USA Today.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm on Twitter, as aren't we all?
Yes, at C. Brennan Sports. The wonderful world.
Yeah. So first initial, last name Sports, at C. Brennan Sports. Also, Facebook, I put columns and things on Facebook. And then, of course, USA Today's website, USA Today's iPhone app, all of that. My stuff is there, but the best way is Twitter, at C. Brennan Sports.
And I got to ask you, too, I mean, covering college football, I mean, it seems like there just becomes more and more parity is taking place within the game. I mean, here we look at the last rankings. You've got, what, one team out of the SEC?
Right. Oh, exactly. And, of course, one wonders, though, if there are two-loss SEC teams, are they going to be looked at in a different way than a two-loss you know, team from another school, for another conference, which I think the answer is going to be yes to that. So I think there's parity in a way. I think there's parity in the SEC, it looks like, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to just sing the praise of the SEC. I think that Oregon, a lot of these schools could still win this thing. I mean, once you actually get on the playing field on January 1st in the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, and then in Dallas January 12th, you know, anything's possible. And I think Florida State is beatable, for sure. We saw that. Notre Dame almost beat Florida State at home. Controversial call that took away a touchdown that could have won it for Notre Dame, and then Notre Dame goes and loses a couple weeks later. So I really do think it's up for grabs, but that makes this whole system, I think, even more questioned and questionable, because without a set four teams that are, like you say, okay, that's the lock. Those are the four that you would want to say for sure are your playoff. This is one of these years that you could probably, we may well find that you could have 8 to 10 teams that you could be arguing. And so that whoever they pick, that 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th team, assuming that they're still deserving, or there are a lot of teams with one or two losses and now let the arguing begin, that's just going to open this whole thing up. And I guess I'll throw out the last little thought here from me is that they're telling us they're giving us a national title, and they may be doing nothing of the sort. In some ways, the old system way back in the 70s and 80s, which was totally flawed, and everyone's yelling, I'm number one, you know, mm-hmm. we're number one, mm-hmm. from USC to Alabama to Michigan to Penn State, and everyone ends the season happy, arguing, but happy. No one was trying to tell us that they were giving us a national champion. Now they're telling us that. And yet it might be just as flawed as those days in the 70s and 80s, and that will be fascinating to watch.
Well, the committee's final rankings is scheduled to be released at 12:45 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday, December the 7th, and we've got still 4 weeks of the regular season. But just give me a quick hit on your thoughts on this whole thing with Jameis Winston, the fact that he still is eligible, because I know that you've written about that in one of your columns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is an ultimate embarrassment to Florida State. There is no way on earth he should have been allowed to play. I mean, it seems to me the transgressions here go on and on, as I know your listeners know. Chief among them, the allegations of rape that are almost 2 years old that Florida State did not investigate against the law, Title IX mandates, a different part of Title IX, not the women and girls on the playing field part of Title IX, but mandates that you have to, same Title IX though, you have to look into these things immediately in a timely fashion, and Florida State did not. And so it is possible, we know an alleged rapist has been playing now and winning a national title in the Heisman. I mean, unbelievable. I think it's a privilege, not a right, to be a college football player. I understand people screaming and yelling about innocent until proven guilty. I get it. But this university has let Jameis Winston lead them around. The adults have left the room. Adults have left the sideline. It is an absolute embarrassment to Florida State, and it is just an utter shame that they have allowed this to go on like this and basically empower a young man to run roughshod over everything that we hold sacred in terms of what's right and wrong.
Christine Brennan has been with us, national columnist with USA Today. Of course, she's been joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. For the latest deals and models, check out stuartcadillac.com. Christine, we just went through our segment way too fast. We will definitely have you back on again real soon. Thank you so much.
Alyssa, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead at YSR. Stay close. Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and time now to completely shift gears. We're going to focus our attention and our conversation on the complexities and the challenges of high-performance sports business and how sports organizations, they're really fighting hard to find new ways to connect with the fans, to focus on new technology, and just really overall, just how to reinvigorate the venue experience. We have invited back to our show, he was on our program earlier, Adam Grossman. He is the founder and president of Block 6 Analytics. He has worked with a number of sports organizations, including the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Washington Capitals, and has done a number of things to enhance corporate sponsorships. And also, he is the co-author of the new book, The Sports Strategist, Developing Leaders for the High Performance Industry. And of course, Adam is joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. How are you on this Friday night? How are things in Chicago?
They're cold. It's just snow a little bit, and we've had our first freezing temperatures of the year. So you know, in Chicago, you can obviously expect more of that. But it's already, it's cold here. It's obviously cold in terms of the way that some of the teams performing, in particular the Chicago Bears.
Yes, we're going to get into the Bears here in just a little bit. But last time, Adam, you were on our show, we hit on a number of topics and we highlighted, you know, the sports industry. And you talk about this in the book, how it's a $750 billion business. I mean, there's record revenues. So I didn't get to ask you this. I mean, what does it take to be a consistent leader in the high performing sports industry? Because there are so many unprecedented challenges that's making it more difficult for organizations for them to meet their goals and to meet those immediate objectives.
Yeah, I think the key to being successful these days is not relying on performance. In the Chicago Tribune on Sunday, we talk about it. The reason that Chicago Bears are successful is, you know, they do want to capitalize when the team is successful and they are able to capitalize on that success. But the reason that the Chicago Bears and NFL teams in general are so successful is that they don't have to rely on their on-the-field performance to help improve their off-the-line bottom line. So, you know, what does that mean in reality? You know, if you look at the NFL, because they have such large television rights agreements, particularly national television rights agreements, you know, if you look at the NFL, they make over $200 million a year per team in terms of their national television rights agreements. And just to put that in context, the salary cap for the NFL for this year is $133 million. So that's not one-to-one that the NFL is going to be successful, you know, that the NFL is going to cover all of its costs based off its television rights contract. It just starts from a very strong strategic place and the fact that it has basically a $200 million plus guaranteed revenue stream, and its biggest cost is at a baseline at $133 million. So making sure to, where you can and when you have the opportunity to do so, lock in revenue streams that aren't dependent on-field performance and, you know, media rights deals, digital rights expansion, sponsorship, making sure to maximize those revenue streams is really critical in order to be successful in today's sports industry. And then also not just only focus on the NFL, but one of the things that all sports leagues need to focus on is their identity and crisis management. You know, what we've seen in terms of the NFL over the past 6 months, and as, you know, Adrian Peterson case comes up again, And as the NFL begins to hear the grievance, and it looks like it's going to hear that on Monday, is, you know, how do leagues manage when crisis happens? How do leagues create a differentiated identity? And when attacks come to those identity, how do they manage those strategic challenges and those strategic issues?
Adam Grossman is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the co-author of The Sports Strategist, Developing Leaders for a High-Performance Industry. And I'm so glad, Adam, that you referenced that article on the Chicago Bears. I mean, because they certainly have a lot of work to do to restore the faith in the organization and with the fans.
Right, and the Chicago Bears, because they operate, so just to give a little more context for your listeners, the Chicago Bears have the NFL's smallest stadium, even though they operate in the NFL's second largest market. Because there's no team in Los Angeles right now, the Bears have a product that's in very high demand, which is our NFL games and NFL games at their venue at Soldier Field. And because that venue is relatively small, there's a high demand for tickets, so they can increase prices regardless of how the team performs. At the same time, you know, you have to be aware of the audience. You have to be interacting with the audience, and you have to see what your audience is. And in terms of the Bears, that's, and for most sports teams, that's the fans, the media, sponsorship, employees, and just people who they're trying to get more involved and more engaged with the organization. So when the media, you know, when it comes to traditional media or social media, is really struggling, you know, when there's a lot of negative stories about the team, particularly about the team's performance, and even as questioning the management structure of the team, you have to be aware of what's going on, and you have to create, you have to be aware of the conversation. You want to be able to manage the conversation and manage the dialogue as much as you can and interact with those different audiences as much as you can. So when things are going poorly, and you are thinking about trying to do the things that the Bears have tried to do, and you're having that kind of engaged dialogue with all the different audience holders and see what they're going through, so that way you can respond and respond quickly when these types of issues happen.
So how patient should Bear fans be? I mean, I think back, you reference this in the book, because in the 70s, the Cubs became known as the lovable losers because, you know, fans and the media and the sponsor, they continued to support the team even when it was not winning.
Yeah, so I think what the Cubs are really good at is that they created a unique stadium experience that wanted people, that enabled people who are interested in baseball to come to the stadium without necessarily, again, relying on the team's on-field performance. You know, people, when they, even today, even though that's no longer really a central focus of the Cubs, you know, you can still come to Wrigley Field, you can still have a Chicago hot dog, you can have an old-style beer, you can hear Take Me Out at the ball game. I mean, it's just, the Chicago Cubs have done a really good job of creating unique stadium experiences that really you can't get at other locations. At the same time, you know, the Cubs are susceptible to, over the past 5 or so years, the attendance has declined a little bit, and they've shifted their focus away from this kind of lovable loser identity. But, you know, again, creating, you know, if the team is not performing well, and again, that's really not in the control of most sports organizations on a day-to-day basis. Over time, they have more control. But the idea of creating unique stadium experiences where fans are more likely to leave their homes and actually come to the venues, that's a critical strategic challenge for sports organizations.
And it really is about mastering those new technologies so that it benefits the fans. Because we talked about that in one of our previous conversations on really how teams, organizations are having to focus on technology.
Absolutely. And again, when fans are coming to games, you know, they're becoming more and more reliant on their mobile devices in particular, obviously. You know, when you're at the stadium, you're usually checking your phone, whether it's checking Twitter or Facebook or any kind of other social media platform where you're seeing, you know, what's going on in the game, what are fans saying. And sometimes when you're at the game, you know, there are people at home actually get a better view of the action than when you're actually at the game. So sometimes you have to even just, you know, when you see something happen on the court or on the field or on the ice, you have to check with people at home because you don't necessarily see it. You don't necessarily see the replays as quickly. And you know, getting that kind of information is critical. So, you know, when the stadium experience often has a lot of challenges compared to the in-home or at a bar or at a venue experience, the out-of-venue experience, you really want to make sure that you're creating these opportunities for people to have these kind of unique, fun, and engaging experiences within the organization at the venue. Because at the end of the day, while these new media rights deals are great and they have helped out a lot in terms of building the businesses of sports leagues, you know, for most sports organizations, getting people actually come to the stadium, buying tickets, buying concessions, paying for parking, buying merchandise when they're at the stadium, you know, that's a huge revenue stream for these organizations. So, you know, really making sure that fans have a reason to come to the stadium is a critical part of what sports organizations are facing right now.
Well, you want fans to have that awesome game day experience. Adam Grossman,
exactly.
The founder and president of Block 6 Athletics, the co-author of The Sports Strategist, Developing Leaders for a High-Performance Industry. Of course, he is joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. And so just for all the listeners across the country, I mean, what do you think is that critical key to building a brand to be able to connect with those consumers? Because that's the fans.
Yeah, I think the idea is creating those points of differentiation. You know, especially when you're talking about Chicago or talking about Houston or Dallas, you know, there's so many different people, there's so many different sports organizations, there's so much competition. So you have to give you know, the different audiences that you're looking at reasons to be engaged with your organization. So whether it comes to new technology, you know, one of the technology things that we talked about, I think, in our last conversation is iBeacon technology, where you go to the stadium,
right,
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, right to your phone, you get the idea of the best promotions, the best seats, the best merchandise, the best concessions. You know, all that stuff comes directly to you. And again, the idea is if you're a sports organization, not everybody can afford that kind of technology. And one of the organizations that we talk about in the book is the Dayton Dragons, which is a minor league baseball team that has the longest consecutive sellout streak in professional sports. And, you know, they're a single A baseball team, so it's not, or a minor league baseball team. They're not necessarily, you know, again, at the major league level or at the super high professional level. But what they've done is that they've created opportunities for fans to engage in the way that the fans want to consume content. You know, they have multiple mascots. They have interesting promotions. They have their staff trained to make sure that they're making sure that at all times that every customer who comes into the stadium is having the best possible fan experience. And one of the cool things that they've done is, you know, sometimes when you're a season ticket holder and you want to buy tickets, you don't necessarily want to buy tickets for the entire year. You want to buy tickets for specific games or specific block of games. And the Dayton Dragons actually go out of their way to not sell people full season ticket packages. They actually want to make sure that you can attend the game. So they'll sell you like a 17-game package as opposed to like a full season package because they want to make sure you're at the stadium and at the venue.
Okay, Adam Grossman, the founder and president of Block 6 Athletics and the co-author of The Sports Strategist. Very high reviews. Go out and get a copy of that. Developing Leaders for the High Performance Industry. He has been joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out stuartcadillac.com. And Adam, we've just got to schedule and carve out two segments because our time goes way too fast. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, and happy to be back on the show anytime you have time.
That, of course, was Adam Grossman, the founder and president of Block 6 Athletics. And time now to thank all of our amazing guests and our lineup. Christine Brennan with USA Today, Ken Davis, award-winning sports writer, Mark Folliwell, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, James Hale with OU Insider, and Jason Peter, who joins us each and every week. As a reminder, don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.